On tonight's show, we are talking about the future of college football. There might be a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, but they're going to also, it could be the train, where these schools have got to figure out so much stuff, scheduling, financials, you name it. We're going to talk about it.
Financials, money, everything. But we're also going to take you around the belt and catch you guys up on what's been going on around the Sun Belt during this entire quarantine.
It's been a minute.
Roll it.
On the show tonight, we've got
every night was a battle.
You can lock this in, take it to the bank.
No class at all. It's unbelievable.
They should see a relatively quick turnaround.
Show me the money.
Big water slides, snow cone truck and everything.
One team stands alone.
Well, you know what I think about Troy.
I'm losing my mind over here.
We've got the moment you've all been waiting for.
Of course.
Welcome back to the show. Holy smokes, it's been a month. Where have we been? We've been working. We've been doing everything.
Working is a big part of it. Like, I mean, it's been ridiculous.
It has been an insane probably month that we have.
How dare they ask us to do these things and then compensate us for it?
Yeah, how dare they? You've been compensated?
Right? Right?
Welcome into the show, ladies and gentlemen. We are the Bench Boys. I'm Colin Cahill.
I'm Thomas, and we're already starting it off right with the RV references.
Yes.
Good night.
Hey, we're there. It's here. They're here. We're talking sports. It's a great time to be alive. The Last Dance for Michael Jordan, everybody's obsessed with it.
You know, I haven't watched it at all. I haven't watched it at all.
I've literally just been watching what people have been saying on Twitter. Every Sunday night for about 3.5 hours, that's all anybody on my timeline talks about. And I just kind of get all the information from them, and I'm like, okay with it. I'm like, you know, I'll watch it in a couple of months when it comes out on ESPN Plus or something like that, or Disney Plus, and they all have it because Disney owns everything. But it's a cool series. I've been like really thinking because my drive-ins to work every day are like a 45-minute drive-in, so I think about a lot of things while I'm driving, and I was like, you know, who really needs to have one of these done is Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods could probably have a 10-part series told on him.
For sure.
I mean, I know they've done like the little 30-minute docs, but no, like I want a deep dive, like. And I want to see, like, he's got a very small inner circle of people that were close to him. I'd love to see his caddy, you know, Steve Williams get interviewed, because that relationship was just incredible at times, and how it ended was incredible. I really think Tiger Woods, like, I think that's, like, he has to be on a short list of if this group or these, you know, if somebody like ESPN again – like is going to do something like this, like he's got to be on a short list of like athletes that has to be talked about in a series kind of like this.
Well, yeah, you're literally talking about the short list of greatest athletes of all time. Yeah. You've got Michael Jordan at the top. You've got Tiger Woods. You've got Kobe Bryant. You've got
I'd say Michael Phelps would probably be on that list.
Serena Williams.
Serena Williams is probably on that list. Just like a top 10 of just that's
everybody
like
greatest at your sport. That's you.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
you.
For sure. I mean,
Tom Brady,
Lance Armstrong. Yeah. That's, I mean, I know like back in the day, 2020 did stuff on him, but like that's, I mean, there's so much like controversy to incredible feats. I mean, that's literally what I think Tiger Woods would be an amazing documentary of, like, to really see, like, it's going to be a lot harder because obviously his personal life and, I mean, yeah, you had his tournaments, but it's so much different. You don't get to see him in the locker room after a round of golf, obviously, there's gotta be, you know, like something.
Not everybody goes into the clubhouse.
No. So,
I like that one because I know the inevitable story is going to hit the crescendo of 2008, 2009 with the car wreck. And then the end of it is going to be
the Masters.
Last year's Masters.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
It's going to be incredible. Like they have to do it at this point. Like, that storybook just tale right there is just so...
And
I mean, it's just right there.
The fact that he was one of the greatest athletes of all time. I mean, it couldn't have been a better, like, if you're writing a story, you couldn't have written it better. He was the best golfer ever. He won all these tournaments. He grew up a pro, and then his life fell to pieces. And then at the end, he wins the big game. Yeah. Like, that's it. That's the story.
Yeah. It's like cliche kind of sitting there, but there's bound to be other things that that can be talked about. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of stories.
His dad, his children.
Oh, yeah. Just his relationship with his dad, his relationship with his mom. I won't get into all of his other relationships, anyway. but still. So you have stuff like that. Like, and let's get back to our point here. We have no sports going on right now. And when you have something like that, like a documentary that every Sunday night, that is all anyone is talking about for 3 hours. It's incredible. I mean, just the capture, and then it's really cool seeing kind of, I mean, cause there's some bold statements that are in this documentary that he's made. And for him, to see like Isaiah Thomas, who he's not great friends with apparently, come out on like social media, and it's kind of all getting stirred up again. Like, as a documentary, you did a pretty damn good job with being able to kind of reignite an old, like, rivalry, such as Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas, obviously. And I mean, there's plenty of others, like Chuck, you know, with Charles Barkley and his relationship with Gary Payton and all that. And just it, that – in itself is incredible feat for a documentary to do. So it's wild what people have kind of drifted to or everybody's kind of centered on whatever sports that they can get. And this is it. And it's a bunch of 1990s basketball games.
And you know, I think that's the perfect point to take and to transition into our first segment, because that's it. There are no sports, but whether you're Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls and ESPN, or you're Adam Prendergast and the Troy Trojans, or you're Georgia Southern or Arkansas State, you got to figure out ways to get people to stick with you throughout the sports drought. And so let's look at some of those ways right now.
Out of the gate.
Well, out of the gate, I did kind of just name drop Troy for this, but they're not the only ones. There are... There's a drought in sports. There's so much content, such a void to fill, that they're literally just pulling out the archives. And Troy is, Georgia Southern is, Georgia State is, our App State is. You're going back to the mill of what they've already done to just replay these games. Like, you've got people linking to YouTube videos. You've got Troy that's hosting them on their website. You've got Georgia State that's doing commentary with a coach, which is... I think that's a great idea, and popping it right up there on Twitter. You've got just so many accounts and so many social, they're creatives. That's what they're called. Social media people going in there and finding creative ways to fill the content void while we don't have live sports. And I'm loving some of the stuff that they're coming up with.
Yeah. I mean, they're earning their salary, let's just say that. And I don't think a lot of them thought that they would have to be having to basically go to the well and dig up things that I mean, sports is the content that keeps on giving. Live sports is, at least, and that is what their job is to focus on the live sports, those results, not having to go back and just
make
dig
coloring
up
pages, do jersey wallpapers, do polls based on what uniform you think was the best, graphics to show you, which helmet did you like the best, just like all these little bitty things that they've got to do as a social media team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's been very interesting to watch. I mean, I saw even like Ark State today had their athletic director kicking field goals in their football field. I mean, for some cause or something like that. So ULM, I'm reading, they're kind of doing a top 20 just individual performances of the 2019 season, of the seasons that were played at least. So that's really interesting. Georgia State, you know, that just they like you kind of mentioned it earlier that, you know, they're having coaches come in and do analysis of games, you know, throughout the games. And that's really interesting to see. Obviously we've seen that, you know, during live events such as, you know, hell, even the national championship, you have the hot room or whatever it is.
Exactly. You got the coaches, you bring in Les Miles and Nick Saban and Gene Chizik and Gus Malzahn. You bring them in and have them dissect these games in real time. You've even got, if you've ever been on ESPN, this is totally a plug for them, but there's a series called Detail, and you've basically got a coach or a quarterback or somebody big like Peyton Manning or Nick Saban, Kobe Bryant. He's the one who put the series together. They're sitting there. They're just running tape, and they're just doing a film room session, and they're giving their commentary and recording it, and you're listening to them explain and break down why is this work, why this doesn't work, why you need to do this play against a one deep, why you can't do this play against a two deep, and why this guy's doing, why this pick and roll didn't work, and just little things like that. And that's a way, something that they've adapted. Both Georgia State's done it with Sean Elliott. You've got Troy did it with players that just did Zoom calls and did their commentary over it. So finding ways to either repackage old material or just to put old material up there, and then finding new material to put up there. It's a challenge every single day, but you got to figure it out one way or another.
You have to figure it out because, I mean, I'm not trying to be sensational here, but you're trying to survive right now. I mean, you are trying to keep your brand up. You're trying to make sure people remember your brand, because it's been what, almost 3 months since we've had a live sporting event in the United States. I mean, we're seeing, you know, South Korea in baseball right now, and don't get me wrong, that's entertaining. The Dinos are amazing, but it, like, you are trying to stay relevant right now. We are seeing networks trying to stay relevant with stuff just like the Last Dance wasn't supposed to air until, I'm pretty sure, June. And they moved that up because of all of this stuff that happened. You're seeing just other networks, Fox Sports. I mean, they're re-airing national championship games. I mean, it's not just schools. It is large networks. It is everyone that that hitched their wagon to the live sports. It's called the queen of television, is live sports. Everybody that has hitched their wagon to that, they are all trying to figure out ways to stay relevant. And they're doing a great job. There's been a lot of creative things. I mean, from minor league baseball teams to college teams, I mean, just what we've been talking about, all of them are trying to stay relevant right now and just trying to stay afloat as well. I mean, we'll get into the financials here in a second, but that is what they're trying to do. That is their purpose right now, is to keep everything in front of the consumer, in front of the fan. Heck, even this little, I know it's small, but even this little mascot challenge thing that's going on, which is really cool. And I don't know where it's from. I don't know what this company is, but just stuff like that. You've seen universities jump in on it. Hell, I know he's a completely different dude, but there's literally a guy that made a fictional character, a fictional coach on a NCAA football game that Texas Tech, he is now the coach of, is tweeting about him on a weekly basis about him. It's literally a guy in his room playing a video game at this point. Like, but it draws people. It gets their name out. Obviously, that guy has a brand, but it just – that, I mean, it's just, they're getting creative. I mean, you know, right now,
NASCAR is literally doing esports as well to keep the sport alive. It is a video game. It is a simulator, but it is a video game for all intents and purposes that you're watching if you watch NASCAR on a weekly basis as of right now. I know they're coming back with live racing in a few days or weeks, but that's beside the point. I want to circle back real quick to the I know you're referring to the Tokyo Dachi thing, the mascot challenge on Instagram, where you're basically voting for what animated version of this character you think is best, cutest, whatever. This company is called Tokyo Dachi, and basically what they do and what Hello Kitty did and what a bunch of these different companies, like with the Japanese animated icons that you've never really seen a TV show, but you know they're a major global thing, like Hello Kitty, the little egg yolk with eyes and it's got the little butt on it. Another character by the same company. But what these companies do is they sell these regular goods and services, but in order for it to be theirs, in order for it to succeed, they literally just put their logo on it. They put a design character that they own on it. And so what Tokyo Dachi's done is they've gone to the NCAA and gone to these schools, and they've gotten the licensing for these little animated versions of college characters. It's their design, but it's licensed, so it's legal, but it's theirs, so they can sell the merch back to you. They make the money off of it. The schools make the money off of it. And it's basically their way of peddling these goods. And in a way, that's kind of a poetic resemblance of what's going on right now in sports. Is you got to figure out a way. You've got all this content, all this stuff that you got to sell. You got to figure out a way to sell it, whether you're ESPN or whether you're a Division I football social media account. You got to figure out a way to get your product out there one way or another.
And just to talk about that mascot challenge, there's been some interesting results in that tournament. I mean, Troy obviously is still going in it. But another team that we've talked about, I don't know if you saw, I did not even realize they would be in this tournament, is the University of West Florida, who is still going on in this tournament. Somehow, some way, they've knocked off all Division I schools. This is a Division II school that has done all this. And so they're still going. I think Troy is still going.
Troy's going. UCF is going. Yeah. West Florida.
UC Irvine, like just small schools, like Grand Canyon.
Fullerton. Yeah.
So it's just I wonder how they chose. They said 256 schools, I think, started. And so that was, you know, I wonder how they chose and got to who was all in. But they just have that.
They have licenses with several hundreds of universities. So I don't know if they have exactly 256 period, but I know that they have quite the license with a lot of schools. I can't talk right now, but quite a lot of schools they have the license for. And so now they're turning it on its head and using Instagram and the lack of sports to really push their college football brand and say, look, this is our product. We want to put it out there.
Yeah. Well, that's what schools are having to do right now. It's a really interesting landscape, and they're all of them. And I think 2 months ago when we talked about this football season, that is the do or die. Like if they don't have a football season, that is a do or die. And back then, obviously we were talking about it as, oh, we don't want to speak it into existence. Well, it's here. Those conversations are being had right now. It is not a far-fetched idea that to say that there might not be a football season this fall for college football, heck, even for the NFL. I mean, when you think of all the things that you had to do pre-coronavirus into making a football game happen, and now you think about all of the things now you're added on to in order to make it happen, I mean – cross-country trips, that just can't happen anymore. And that has been the big thing. And I know group of fives, I know, yes, I'm not saying they don't make cross-country trips, but you're not seeing a whole lot of that happen anymore. The group of fives are playing the regional power five games, you know, the one game a year, and then they get some of the smaller schools. But you aren't seeing a Troy. I mean, yes, they played Boise State, you know, a couple years ago for back-to-back years, but you aren't seeing the Troy versus, you know, a Pac-12 team anymore, or heck, a Sun Belt versus, you know, a team. Just you aren't seeing those long road trips that you would have seen probably 10 years ago at all.
I don't know how much I would – I don't know how much I would necessarily agree with that because Troy went to Kansas State in the early 2000s, and Troy went to Nebraska 2 years ago. Troy went to Boise State 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And Troy is probably is set to go to – I want to say – well, they're going to Tennessee this year, and I'm sure Troy has a game in the future that I can't think of where they're going away to some either far eastern seaboard team. I know they're going to an ACC school in the future. If we haven't already met our end of the bargain with NC State, we got to go back to NC State at some point.
Yeah.
But they're not doing cross country trips because a lot of these Sunbelt schools aren't going across the country, but they are traveling. They are traveling hundreds and thousands of miles.
They're traveling, but they aren't doing like what Alabama and USC or what Ohio State does every year.
Is that true, though, because Texas State is out in San Marcos? Is that true because App State's up in North Carolina?
I mean,
to some extent, what I'm saying is there is a lot of travel involved.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair point. I will say that, but they're playing. That's because of the conference that they're in. They're at least playing. I mean, you're talking about the travel within the conference. I mean, App State. They aren't. I mean, they just played North Carolina and South Carolina this past year. Those are both regional games. I mean, what I'm saying is that teams were over in the past couple of years were already starting to look at playing regionally because it saves them money. I mean, Troy playing Southern Miss this year, that's a regional game. Troy playing Mississippi State, Troy playing Tennessee, I'd say Tennessee's a regional game. That they're up in Knoxville. That's from Troy, Alabama. We're talking a 6-7 hour drive.
I think the other perspective is true, though. Power Five schools were looking to do this sort of thing because you wanted Auburn playing Oregon and Dallas. You wanted Alabama playing USC. You wanted Michigan playing Stanford or whatever. Yeah. You did want these big Power Five matchups that didn't normally happen.
Yeah.
So while I think I'm getting what you're saying now, because it's not necessarily that Sunbelt schools are going across the country to do these big matchups because they're not the quote-unquote bigger schools. But these bigger schools want the big matchups against bigger schools because it looks better for them, and they're willing and able to pay more to go.
Exactly, they can. I mean, we have already done our shows on the difference of what big school, what power schools make compared to group of fives. That we've talked about that dozens of times on this show. They can afford to do that, but now. One, group of fives, they can't do that, especially now. Like, I mean, just with everything that's going on, they just can't afford that. And I think now power fives are in that realm. And I think this would be the best time. And I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I think this would be the best time to, if the Alabamas have the game scheduled against USC, or if Auburn plays Oregon, or Georgia Tech plays, Texas or TCU, just hypothetical stuff, if they're looking at playing those games, this might not be a bad time to schedule a regional game against maybe your little brother or just a regional G5 game, and you help out the little brother. I mean, you're paying him a little bit, but what do you got to lose? I mean, you have football. What I'm trying to say is the traveling on an airplane to across the country, traveling on an airplane anywhere now is going to be so much harder, especially when you're trying to move 53 guys plus a coaching staff on it all. I mean, there's so much stuff that could go wrong in that. And just with travel restrictions, that's the biggest thing that a lot of these schools are especially, I mean, there's a lot of conversation going on with week one already, because week one, week two, week three, that's when you get all of those cross Power Five conference games. And with what's going on in the Pac-12 and just all of the states and what they're laying out, they're not going to be able to do that. And so the schools that are in states like what came out today, most of the Sun, all of the Sun Belt schools are luckily in states that are allowing kids back on campuses. They have a little bit more room to work with than what those schools are. So they're trying to figure out what they're going to do right now. And what I'm basically trying to say is this might not be a bad time to look at an Alabama playing a smaller school. Yes, okay, you don't have the tough conference schedule, but people are going to probably understand this year.
I have to somewhat agree, but let's take it back and look at from the planning perspective, because you got to think about the cost of flight games, of games where you fly. And I know that ULM may not necessarily be able to do that, but several schools in the Sun Belt are flying. They are taking planes to some of these schools. They're taking planes to some of the schools in the conference, like San Marcos and App State. There is a cost to that, and when you have schools that are already cutting season ticket prices like ULM, when you've got teams that are absolutely folding like Florida Tech, which we haven't even got to yet.
No.
That's a huge thing. That's a huge harbinger that we need to talk about. But if you step back and look at it from a planning perspective, I think it's worth explaining that. You have to get all these guys masks. You got to get all these guys specific bags. You got to keep them sanitized the whole time. You can't let 100 guys touch the same thing that 5,000 different people did, because if one thing goes wrong, that entire team gets coronavirus just from one visit. And that if they go play that team the next day, that's a risk.
Yeah.
And I know that it's not going to be much different on a bus than a plane, but number one, a bus is cheaper. Number two,
it's domestic.
Schools can buy buses. Like, I mean, schools can, even when they rent buses, some of those buses are going to be a lot easier to sanitize than a plane. You're going to take the one bus the whole time up and the whole time back, whereas you take maybe one or two planes. So just each of these little details, the hotel, that's a big deal. I mean, it's going to be sanitized day in and day out, but you can't let them go eat breakfast necessarily. You're going to have to go get breakfast for them and bring it to them. You're going to have to keep them separated. You might have to get an extra number of rooms because you can't get four people into a room as opposed to two to keep them separated. So now you've doubled the number of rooms you got to get when you travel out of state. So like each of these little tiny little details that you've got to consider when added to let's go play a football game, which is what we normally do, the costs start adding up quickly.
I mean, you are solely talking about two teams, yeah, two coaching staffs,
yeah,
and the logistics of them traveling.
Yep.
We haven't even gotten into the actual game. And
referees,
the fans,
camera crews. Well, let's say that we don't have any fans. Let's say that we don't have any fans, and let's not even address the fact that that's cutting off a huge income source for all these teams.
Yep.
You got to have camera crews. You got to have refs. You got to have. You got to get the teams in. You got to have police officers there. I'm sure that there are going to be some representatives of the universities that are going to meet there. The athletic director, I guarantee you, Jeremy McLean, Brent Jones, Joel Erdman. These guys are going to go to the games and watch the games on the sideline. They're going to be there. They're going to shake hands with the other AD. They might be wearing gloves, but they're going to do it.
Hands.
But that's another step that they got to add. And
look, I know several members of teams. Okay, whether it's, I mean, obviously I know athletic trainers that have worked with teams. I know equipment managers that work with teams. Their jobs pregame, it takes hours to set stuff up like that. And now you're tossing it, make sure you do this and sanitize everything and make sure everything is clean before all of this.
Wear your gloves. Wear gloves. So wash your hands every time.
Sterilize footballs. I mean, it's just there's so many little things that have to be done. And that is literally just to play the game.
You got to get athletic trainers and equipment managers. Not only are you going to have to socially distance on the sidelines, that's going to make their job harder. You've got equipment managers who are going to, during the game, going to have to already wear gloves addition to the gloves, you've got athletic trainers who are going to have to wear gloves and keep their hands sanitized. Like, there's just so many little things. Like, you're going to have to keep a truck just for the Lysol, dude.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't think there's enough Lysol to go around. So no, it's good to see all the states, and what we saw today with, I think Louisiana was the final piece of the puzzle for the, when we're talking about Sunbelt, for, you know, allowing kids back on campus. That's great. And we've heard multiple athletic directors say, if we've got kids on campus, we're going to have sports. It's just, we've heard Jack Hawkins say it. We've heard Alabama say it. We've heard a lot of people around our state say it, that if that's going to be a thing, we're going to have sports. I mean, it's great and all, but the logistics of getting this done is incredible. I mean, we're talking about this, Thomas, the Sun Belt just decided to move its entire media day, which is normally the last week of July, so it's completely virtual. And we're talking, we've been there. We've been to media day the last 4 years.
A couple times, yeah.
We're talking a couple hundred people in there and two representatives from each team. And they said, nope, we're totally getting rid of that. Granted, it was held in New Orleans, and New Orleans is a hot spot, a hotbed for what's been going on. But
you've also got all these other group of five conferences that are doing it as well. Literally every group of five conference has done this.
Yep.
Pac-12 has done this. If it was about New Orleans, why would all these other conferences up and do it? Why wouldn't they take the risk?
Oh, I'm not saying that it's just because of New Orleans. I'm just saying that was probably a major contributing factor.
I'm sure
factor.
It was a major decision, a factor in that decision. Yeah. But you got to think about this in context. There's so many other factors going into it for that. You got to have, if all these other group of five conferences are doing it as well, there's got to be way more to it than just where this is taking place.
Yeah, no, I think they are looking at the logistics are just incredible. And if they're already moving stuff like that, and that is, we're talking 200, you know, 300 people over 2 days, probably in there, the logistics of a football game and moving players, right now it doesn't seem like it can be done. Trust me, we're not those guys that should know that, but in our view right now, just after the 10 minutes of us talking about all the things that have to be done, I would not know where to start.
More than 10 minutes, but I'm also going to put forward the point, look behind me. Like, just look behind me. Am I the kind of person that would want this? No. No, I don't. Neither of us want this. Nobody
I want to see football.
This.
I would love to see football on my TV come Saturday, August 31st. I'd love to see a football game on my TV. But if they can do it, I wouldn't be against not seeing fans in a stadium.
No, I don't think anybody really would be against that whatsoever. But I have to go back to your point. I think that the best solution, if we're going to try this, is to have the regional games. I like that. I like maybe making it a day trip radius, 6-hour radius, because then you don't have to worry about hotels. Yeah, I know it sucks, but hotels are hurting the most right now. We don't have to worry about that. You can take a bus there and a bus back, have it in a 6-hour radius. You just load up everybody on one bus. You go, you do it, and you come back. You don't have to worry about hotel. All you have to do is gas and food.
But even that, Thomas, think about that. 6-hour radius. You're telling me, okay, so let's just theoretically say Georgia State decides to play Florida State. Atlanta to Tallahassee, that's probably about 6 hours. Maybe a little bit longer from Atlanta. Georgia State would have to wake up at 2 a.m. in the morning, get there at 8, and then you need 4 hours to set up a field. And that is 4 hours to set up a field. That's what it takes. That's how many hours that when athletic trainers, equipment manager, they get out there 4 hours ahead of time to start setting up field. to have to move everything. That's before all that. So you're talking, they have to leave at 2 a.m. in the morning, get there at 8 to play a noon game. So 10 hours worth of travel setup time, and you're getting an entire team up, play the game, get back in the car, break down everything, which normally takes about 2 hours. So we're talking 4 p.m., maybe 6 p.m. by the time that you're really going, 6 hours back at midnight. That's what we're talking about. If it's a 6 hour radius, and we talked before the show, I said 6 hour radius too, but now just thinking about it, that's just damn near impossible. You want kids playing a football game after a 6 hour drive to just get off the bus and do a walkthrough and boom, there you go. Like, that's just unfair to the student athlete at that point. I mean, no student, no player, no football player, no baseball player, basketball player, doesn't matter what sport, no player is going to be able to be at 100% to be able to do that. That's just, it's not healthy to do. So that's a whole nother thing that people just don't understand. Like, even 6 hour drive, that turns into almost a 10 hour process before you even play the game.
And then you add in the hotel factor. That's an added cost
yep.
that you're going to have to do anyway. That's extra time that these managers are going to have to spend cleaning in addition to their regular job. Mm-hmm. And so let's say it is a 6 hour radius, but they take the Sunday to come back. Like that's they're going to be back in the afternoon
mm-hmm.
if you give them enough time to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's going to take out their entire weekend, and they're not going to get any sort of break whatsoever.
Nope.
I mean,
it's pretty much it's. We said that the light at the end of the tunnel. I think you were more right on it. It's a train. I think the train's coming through.
I think that was and here I was thinking that we were actually going to get to agree on that point and say, yeah, 6 hour radius is a great thing. And that's our point. We're going to end on it and we can move on. But, you know, the more we're thinking about it. And I think for the NFL, it's going to be easier. I think that's likely for the NFL. It's possible for the NFL. Mm-hmm. Number one, because you've got these grown men who have – that is their job. They're getting paid to do it. So they can take a company trip to – across
also the private jets, mostly.
Yeah. Yeah. most of these teams probably have a private jet.
Private charter.
Yeah. Or even their private – like the Patriots. They have their private friggin' mm-hmm. Boeing plane.
Yeah, he flew it across the country. Friggin' – wherever, China or whatever it was.
Hey, yeah, but when it
colleges can't do that. College
can't do that.
Can't.
And then let's talk about the fact. Let's talk about the money.
Yeah.
We've done that for a little bit here, but let's talk about the income side of it now, because you're losing out on concession money. You're losing out on money that you would get for tickets. You're losing out on money that you would get for souvenirs. You're losing out on the TV revenue that you probably would normally get. And how many of these schools would be like willing to pay you beyond travel to come play there? Like a Florida State or an LSU or an Alabama. Beyond the fact that you're having to go play this game, well, sure, we'll pay for your gas and your hotel, but we're not paying you beyond that because we're hurting too.
Everything you said, I think schools would be willing to give up ticket sales and souvenirs and concessions.
Really?
It's the TV deal. The TV deals are that is the line that they, and that's what all these conversations that are going on right now is the fact they are all trying to figure out what do we have to do in order to play a football game that is going to get broadcasted on a Saturday that we can make money off of, whether it's streamed or on TV. The TV deals are and then that's what they're going to make. But then you got to think about if those don't get done, then we're talking conferences have to pay back like the broadcaster.
Yeah.
And so that's a whole other thing. I mean, so there are so many. I mean, it's I hate to bring in Shrek here, but it's like a freaking onion, and you peel back and there's another layer. There's just one more layer. You just keep uncovering layers to all of the problems that are coming along with this. And it's insane that we've gotten here, but this is what happens. I mean, this is where we are right now, unfortunately, in this time period, because it's going to be like this until there is, and this is completely purely my opinion, but until there is a vaccine out for this thing, this is the mindset that we're going to have about everything that happens. And because everyone's going to be afraid of to travel, to do any of this type of stuff. So this is, I don't even know, like financials, like we're getting the monies here. We even got into scheduling.
It's all there to connect it together. It's one big onion stew.
Pretty much a big old onion stew. That's a good analogy. But we're talking about Group of Fives. We're talking about Division I programs. You mentioned Florida Tech and athletic programs that they're figuring out, well, there's one easy way to fix this. We're just disbanding it. Because right now, we are an education facility first before athletics. That's the other thing. Athletics, people are figuring out, or people have learned that athletics is an extracurricular activity. It is not what universities were developed for.
So Florida Tech, if y'all haven't already seen my tweet or you haven't heard about it through the grapevine or whatever, a Division II school down in Florida. Starts with an M. That's the name of the town. I can't remember. Melbourne. Yeah, Melbourne. Division II school, really young program. Division II program that's just like, nah, we can't deal with this anymore. We just gotta cut it off now. We're not gonna have football program anymore. And it's not. Yes, of course. If any school was going to be the first to drop the shoe, it would be a Division II program or Division III program that's relatively young, it's relatively new. That's going to be the first school to do it. But this is the analogy of the canary in the coal mine. Miners used to take canaries down into the coal mine, and you realize, like, when your canary's dead, you're inhaling enough poison to kill a canary. You don't need to go any further. Like, that's what the phrase comes. This isn't a canary in the coal mine just yet, but we got one of the birds that's toppled over. If we keep going down this road, which we have no other choice, I get the feeling we're going to see a couple more Division II and Division III schools that are going to be at least suspending it for another year or two. Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. So we're talking about them. There's only two, well, now one, there is only one other Division II football program in the entire state of Florida. One of the things that they looked at was travel costs and the fact that they are all the way in Melbourne, Florida. They're outside of six-hour drives just about everywhere. And so that's the thing. They said, we can't afford to. We could just that's a cost that we can get rid of right there. And so universities, they're going to see that and they're going to be like, yep, that's an easy way to save some money.
Idaho State, Montana, your big, big Northwest schools, not necessarily Pacific Northwest, but your big sky country schools, the ones that are in the middle of nowhere, like Laramie. Mm-hmm. You're going to see some of the Mountain West schools really consider what programs are essential, like Wyoming. Hawaii is going to be a big one.
Yeah.
You're going to see Maine's probably going to look into it. You're going to see these schools that, yes, even if they have a safety net of schools around them, they're going to have to start cutting limbs. And that's the whole reason that we dropped Idaho and New Mexico State as a conference.
It costs too much to go up at.
Nothing to hate against them, but it costs so much to go out to the Kibbe Dome.
Yeah.
And I think Idaho might be considering it too. I don't think they will, but there's a possibility that they just suspend everything for a year, and that's going to be really stupid. But we'll take that example of Idaho, New Mexico State. You can take the example of UAB. If there's enough support for it, they might say, you know, we could pull a UAB. We might have the money and the capability and the fan base to go, we're going to cut football off for a year. Let's see what happens next year. Mm-hmm. Earlier today, I was listening to Sports Talk Radio. Got to get my content from somewhere. Got to steal it from somebody. But they were talking about the precedent of World War II. And that's a huge precedent because a lot of schools did cancel their programs around World War II. in the Great Depression. And then some of them popped up later. Some of them waited till the late 20th century to pop up, like South Florida did. But like, you're going to see a lot of these people looking at precedents and looking at other examples and mostly the costs and what they can get out of it. But you're going to, I like the point that Melbourne is 6 hours from everywhere. You're going to have these outliers that either chop it off or suspend, or it's, they're going to have to really consider how much that football program brings in. And if we're looking at the numbers, unless you're a blue blood, you're really not making anything off of it.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to vilify. We're not trying to vilify athletic programs or schools or anything like that. But it comes down into it's a business. And these athletic directors, they are paid, yes, to obviously provide entertainment. But they are paid to make sure that you guys are still making money and not losing it. Because there's investors in universities. They have to figure out how to pay people.
Some of those investors are you and me, the taxpayers. Yeah.
So they have to figure out how are we going to have a ROI or a return on investment. And like what Florida Tech did, they just said, where can we save money at? Oh, we don't have to send, we don't have to pay for 100 kids scholarship, or they're still paying for their scholarship, but we don't have to pay for 70 kids to travel every weekend, basically, that isn't a home game. Yeah, we're going to cut that. That's easy.
You've got to consider it's like a mother returning to work after having a child. Is it worth it to go get this job and pay money, almost that same amount of money for a nanny? Or is it going to be more cost effective for me to just stay home?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, oh, man. Well, we're back.
I watched an episode of Scrubs the other day where Carla and Turk had just had their baby and they had that conversation. That's the only reason that's on my brain. But I mean,
this is where we're at now. It's been a month and a half. I know our tune probably hasn't changed much since our last episode, but unfortunately things haven't gotten better. I mean, yes, there's little bleeps of bright spots here, but we are both, me and Thomas, I feel like we are both pessimistic views. We try to be optimistic at times, especially when we're rooting for our teams. But when we see what we see, and then just knowing what it takes right now to put on, to get a team to travel personally, this is our views. And it's, yeah, we might sound like pessimists.
I'll be the first to admit that there's a lot of stuff that I brought up today that I'm sure somebody who has a lot more knowledge that is actually working in the industry could come and say, you know, yeah, you got that wrong. That's not actually that bad. That's not actually how that works. But I'm trying to not be pessimistic. I'm trying to be realistic about this thing because of all it is so much more intricate. I love the sport. I love the game, but you're not going to get 100 people to go somewhere else and do a thing for 4 hours and come back. That is not as easy as an Xbox 360 game makes it look.
Thank you. That was literally going to bring that up. I think we wrapped up the is it a light at the end of the tunnel or a train? And I don't want to call it a train. We don't hear it yet. But it's going to be interesting to definitely see what kind of plays out here over the next couple of weeks.
I'm going to keep the analogies going. We see a light. The light travels faster than sound. It could be the train, but we don't hear the rumblings yet. Like,
There you go. So with that, let's just roll out. And we've got some things to talk about that have been happening around the belt.
Around the belt.
And if you're still with us, now we're going around the belt. I know that was a really detailed conversation, in-depth look at just what's going on here. It's just a crazy time. With that crazy time, though, we've been seeing some good things, some good news, some interesting stories around the belt. John Krasinski, obviously. We are not part of the SGN, the Some Good News Network, or whatever it is. We kind of talked about it, kind of highlighted just schools being creative. But some things that we were seeing, obviously ESPN named some top 40 under 40 coaches in various sports, whether it's basketball or actually their particular one was just basketball. But one of the Sun Belt coaches was on that. Actually, two were on it. One just missed the cut. But one that is a hot name right now is Richie Riley, the head men's basketball coach for the South Alabama Jaguars. Obviously, the way they finished that season is a huge reason I think that he's on this. Finished last season is a huge reason why I think he is on this list. And then his recruiting capabilities is and what he's kind of doing. He is building kind of a transfer powerhouse in the G5 ranks down in South Alabama, where he's just bringing in guys that have 1 or 2 years of eligibility left, good players from other conferences, and he's putting together a squad. And I was talking to a buddy today about it, that they're going to be a team that struggles their first five. And when I say struggle, I'm not saying that they're going to lose their first 7 games to start the year, but they're going to have their struggles to start the year. But come mid-January, they're going to be a team that has all of the pieces necessary or needed to win a conference championship and be a March Madness type of team. And that is what Richie Riley is assembling. And that is what ESPN kind of highlighted about him, was his knack for being able to do something like that. And the fact that he's under 40 years old and being able to do something like that is impressive. So he made the list of 40 under 40.
I think it's important to point out at this point too, it's obvious, it's kind of a duh thing to say that South Alabama historically is a baseball and basketball program. It's like, well, They didn't have football, so obviously they're going to be the other two. But that's not even completely the thing. In the 70s, South Alabama, in their early years as a baseball team, were going to the college tournament regularly. The basketball team in the 80s under Mark Pelfrey were extremely good as well. They went to the tournament several times themselves. So over historically and over the course of the past several decades, South Alabama has been a premier team on the court and on the diamond. And Richie Riley is the next guy in that. He has absolutely turned this team around in maybe 1 or 2 seasons. And I think last year was a huge, huge sign for that. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and let you finish there.
He's definitely proving his worth for sure in that signing. The other guy who made that list, or I guess with an asterisk, just missed the top 40 was Chris Ogden at UTA. And you and me both kind of talked about that decision. And he's a good coach. I'm not saying he's not a bad coach by any means, but I think he's living off of another coach's success a little bit.
We won't get too much into it, but you know, he's, for what he has done statistically and on paper, Chris Ogden, got to give him credit for the work he's done at UTA.
Yeah. We'll see what happens this year. So it's not like they weren't a bad team this past year.
No.
Other thing that caught my eye, Athlon Sports, the boys over at Athlon Sports, Braden Gall hosts their podcast, the Cover 2 podcast. They're reaching down into the G5. Game here, and they went and they ranked their top group of five coaches. That this is particularly Braden Gall, his top group of five coaches that he would hire at the Power Five level today. That was an interesting list. From 10 to 1, Blake Anderson, Billy Napier, 10 and 9, Craig Bohl, Lance Leipold, Willie Fritz, Will Healy, Brian Harsin, Luke Fickell. And then in his top two were Bill Clark with UAB, and number one was Hugh Freeze, which very interesting pick for number one. I think I'm not saying Hugh Freeze just comes with too much baggage in my opinion.
I don't even want to get. I mean, I agree with you there, but I wouldn't even get into that with him. I think it's worth looking at what he did. He was solid at Ole Miss, but when I think of hot group of five coaches, I am kind of thinking of younger guys. Like, I'm not thinking of Frank Solich at Ohio, who is one of the winningest active coaches all time right now. Mm-hmm. But the dude's 50, 60, 70 years old.
Oh, he's probably in his late 60s for sure.
But, like, Hugh Freeze doesn't strike me as one of these guys who's like a Lance Leipold or a Luke Fickell who's like just getting into the head coaching game and is really starting to spark. He doesn't strike me as a Neil Brown or Scott Satterfield type. He strikes me more as somebody who's been at the top and is coming back down. Like, I don't know. I have a comparison for that right now.
Like a Bobby Petrino?
Like a Bobby Petrino, yeah. Like a Bobby Petrino.
There you go.
I mean, I think that is the most apt comparison that we can make. But
pretty much.
It's not that he's not a good coach, which is obviously their metric.
No.
Because if they're going by, he's the best coach, he's the most talented coach in the group of five, you might be right. I can't disagree with you on that, but it doesn't feel right to me. And it's not because of anything he's done, any of his baggage. It just doesn't feel right because he was at Arkansas State for, what, 1 year? And then bolted? He was great at Arkansas State for 1 year, bolted, went to Ole Miss, built up Ole Miss, then comes the baggage because of the way he built it up.
Yeah.
But that's like saying Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic. Mm-hmm. He was literally the coach of the Raiders for a year, dude. Mm-hmm. He was at USC and Tennessee. I don't know.
He failed backward. Yeah.
He literally did.
They've got a couple, obviously Brett Anderson, Billy Napier, Sun Belt guys now. Willie Fritz was a Sun Belt guy. And Brian Harsin was a Sun Belt guy. So there's four guys, and I think a lot of people in the Sun Belt are very familiar with Bill Clark and what he's done at UAB. I think Bill Clark's going to be a really hot name this coming season, or if there is one. I like Craig Bohl. I've heard a lot of good things about Craig Bohl. He's a good dude, and obviously a great coach with what he did at North Dakota State. It's a respectable list that I think he put together.
He's at Wyoming now, isn't he?
He is at Wyoming now. So it's a good list that he put together. It's very interesting. You guys need to hop on over and check out Athlon Sports. Always has good takes and really, really good in-depth information. And I personally listen to Braden a lot he's also on Sirius XM too. We're just plugging the hell out of his show. Good list. It's an interesting list. It's a talker, I feel like. I think there's some other guys that are close to that list.
Sunbelt alone, I do think that those are the best two Sunbelt coaches.
Oh, Billy Napier, Billy, definitely. I think Sean Elliott could be a guy that, depending on what Georgia State does this year, I think he could be a guy that, I mean, he has South Carolina. He's got SEC ties before he came here. He's an offensive line coach. Those guys make it far. Those guys are good coaches. I remember us
saying that was last year was a make or break year for Georgia Southern and Georgia State. You're right. Sorry. Apologies, Eagles fans.
State, not Southern.
Don't come at me. Don't at me. But Georgia State, it was a make or break year for them. And I think, I mean, even if they had won the Tennessee game and then went 4-8, I think it might have been a make year for them. But they did. Didn't they go to the bowl game?
Yeah.
I mean, they limped into a bowl game, but yeah, they made it into a bowl game. And they did really well without Penny Hart. So I think it was a make year for him. He at least buys himself a couple extra years to really get going because they're not slowing down. They're not trying to restart the machine by any means. They're just getting started.
Yeah, they finished 7-6. They did well.
Yeah. They went to a bowl game. They were 7-5 and went to a bowl
they,
game.
They lost to Craig Bohl in Wyoming.
Yep.
So it was just interesting to see some G5 love from some other people. That's really what caught my eye. The one other little thing, Louisiana, we were talking earlier for softball, the rich just get richer. Louisiana picked up a pretty good, pretty big transfer out of University of Arizona pitcher. They were already had a loading pitching staff, and their pitching staff just got better. So.
And they're getting it all back next year, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm sure most of them will come back and play another season.
The one that matters is coming back.
Yeah.
Good night. I can't even remember her name, but I know exactly who we're talking about. Yeah. And she's probably going to be the conference MVP again next year. It's just
– Yeah. So that should do it for Around the Belt, and that should probably do it for this episode. It was fun coming back. It's been a while. There's been a lot of things happening. We might have some more big news here in the next couple of weeks on a lot of things. Personally,
a lot of stuff going on.
Personally, we've both been busy at work.
We never did do that. That bracket, did we?
Yeah, the bracket never made it out of our hands. Just because
I know, like six of y'all needed closure on that.
Six of you guys. we'll attempt to do something maybe later on in the year. Things just got really busy, and things are gonna get more busy here in the next few months.
That's the whole name of the game right now, is that we don't know exactly what's about to happen, and we don't know what's coming down the pipe. But
we will still be here trying to put episodes on every week, trying to get back into some sort of routine here.
We promise it will be fewer than 4 weeks before our next episode.
Yes, I think we can make that happen. So if you're here, if you're still here, if you're listening, hit that subscribe button. Hit the likes. Hell, give us some reviews. I mean, are we doing well?
You can do that on iTunes. You can do it on YouTube. You can do it wherever. Yeah. Follow us on Twitter. You can yell at us on Twitter for sure. I will yell back at you if you want.
Yeah.
At the OG Bench Boys. I'm at Thomas Gleaton. He's at Colin Cahill 13.
Yeah. I mean, if you're on YouTube, hit the like button, share it, you know, whatever. We're trying to grow a brand here. So just if you like us, let us know. That's all I got to say. So with that, I think we've hit on just about everything we could possibly hit on. I might need to start watching The Last Dance. Who knows? So that's all I've got. You got anything?
I ain't got nothing else.
Perfect. Then just come on back.